Everybody. All right, so welcome to the Committee for the Republic of Canada, the La Rouge movement in Canada. I'll try to stay brief because we have a lot to cover with Luke and Meredith. Their class is gonna be challenging, so I'll try to be. I'm gonna stick to what's happening in the United States because people have heard, right, the famous healthcare legislation passed in the United States. And if you know a bit what we've published about that, we know that it's not a good thing. It's actually based on a proposal and law imposed by the Nazis in 1939, which is this idea of a creation of a board that has overwhelming powers above the government, so the government can't do much about it. And it basically dictates a necessity to cut useless cares, useless treatment, useless people. And they're not talking about bankers or speculators. They're talking about old people, poor, infirm people, people that supposedly are too expensive for the welfare of the country. And it's important to realize that because, I mean, we hear in the newspaper here especially, you know, that this big breakthrough, you know, the United States is back on their on the path set by their constitution and things like that. And it's really the opposite. I'm just going to read just a little short the paragraph of Rachel Brown's latest statement on the issue. Rachel Brown is the one of our members running for Congress in the United States in the Massachusetts area. And she says, well, the title is, now that's important, Obama's healthcare victory drives forward his downfall. So it says, Obama and the spineless Congress just voted in London's fascism. The healthcare bill, as I stated last August in my interaction with Barney Frank, is fascism. The Republicans' parliamentary procedures didn't stop it, Scott Brown didn't stop it, and Democrats sacrificed their supposed morals to vote in a Nazi-modeled T4 death board. The real intention of this bill is the IPAB, formerly IMAC or IMAB, austerity board, which creates a policy precedent to kill poor, sick, and elderly Americans in order to save money, as Hitler did in the hospitals of Germany in 1939. So, yeah, this law means that first there's a, it's a genocidal law for the population, but it's also, it's a suicidal law for people in the government. Because, and people were very open about it, the American population hates that policy. And not because they're all a bunch of rednecks. No, the Americans are understanding that they're collapsing, that their government is not doing anything about it, that, you know, foreclosures is going up and there's no legislation to prevent that, people losing their jobs. And now the healthcare is, or whatever healthcare they have, is being threatened by this IPAB, the austerity board. And people were openly discussing about the fact that whoever voted for that thing probably is going to lose their seat in the next congressional election, which are at the end of the year, 2010. But Obama, Nancy Pelosi, and these other people are completely, like, you know, euphoric about what they supposedly accomplished, and they're completely they're just crazy about it. But I mean, what, just go into some detail because I don't want to. But basically, what's been covered by the media is here, and it was funny because when you talk to people in the street, people that love Obama, and they say, yeah, this legislation is the Canadian system. Everybody covered, and, you know, you get golden needles, to shoot vaccination or something. And then when the legislation passed and the media started covering it, you would have expected some huge article with some super details about how beautiful this thing is. And actually, it wasn't the case at all. Most media covered the same thing, which is that the plan is actually a bailout to the insurance company. And I'll just go into some detail, but the main thing is that there's a law. This law will force American citizens, if you don't do it, you're fined, right, to buy private insurance, private healthcare insurance. And if you can't pay, if you're like, I think it's, if you're like a bit, just a little bit higher poverty level, then you can get subsidies from the government. But it's actually money from the government going to insurance companies to the level of billions of dollars. And insurance companies are part of the problem because these are the institutions that are as well bankrupt, being linked with the banks in general, but are going bankrupt in the United States. And there's different problem that arises because, for example, if you look at the Medicaid, because the Medicaid is what covers the poor. Like the Medicare goes more for like pensioners or people that have different services. But the Medicaid is something that has to be paid by the states as well. And there's a bunch of states, attorney generals of different states that are getting together because they're saying that, well, they're first saying, oh, look, buddy, we're bankrupt. And then you want us to give money to the insurance bank, right? So they say, we're not going to be able to cover all these people. We're bankrupt. We actually need help from the federal government, but this help is not coming. So these guys have decided, there's, I think, 12 attorney generals that said they're going to sue the federal government and try to, change the law. And there's also some doctors coming out attacking exactly as we were saying this famous medical austerity board. They're called the Doctors for Patient Care, and it's a growing group in the United States, and they're pretty much saying what we're saying, but with some water, like when you put water in your wine, you don't want to say too much, but you just attack some of these laws, and they attack the IMAC, especially because, according to them, those that are more targeted are going to be the youth. Because, see, today we don't, fascists learned their lessons that when you talk to people, you want to use some type of, academic slang. But you don't say useless either. You just talk about efficiency care, quality care, which is pretty much the same thing. So people like Ezekiel Emanuel, that are one of the different thinkers of the legislation, basically said that he made this curve. I'm just going to show you the curve. That shows who should get health care and in what proportion. And I'm not kidding. So you have, I think it's about, so if you're 0 to 10 years old, so the curve goes kind of like this. Like if you're here, then you get your health care, no problem. And then, but this basically attacks, if you have a kid with infirmity or a disease, then the quality or the efficiency care comes into play, and then there's this whole morality financial argument that says, well, should we spend all those tens of thousands of dollars on these people? Is it worth it? And it's the same question I guess in the time of Hitler, they just did it. But then they're trying to, today it's like you're trying to convince the population that this has to be done for financial reasons or for what they call the quality end of life. You know, we don't want you to suffer, so we'll help you end this as soon as possible. And we see the same type of debate here in the province, where you have a group of doctors that calls pretty much to discuss euthanasia. But don't be fooled by, you know, there are documentaries coming out, or it's been coming out for a couple of years now to try to just set the terrain and to actually bring into being those quality treatment or efficiency treatment to actually justify that, look, these guys, we used to give it to them, but it's not really it's not going to be useful. It's going to be actually more costly than anything else. And that's what we have to deal with. So that's the issue. And the problem is that whoever is against that legislation in the United States is not doing its job. And don't think about the Republicans. The Republicans are idiots. They said, oh, we want to protect the sanctity of life. So Obama said, yeah, okay, so we'll put a law against, financing abortion. So they're super happy because, you know, we're going to protect the unborn, but then, you know, if you're over 60, you know, you gotta walk in the street with some, yeah, you know, so you're threatened. Your life is threatened. That's what this legislation does. And even one of the doctors of the group I talked to you about, Doctors for Patient Care, his name was Dr. Al Schurz. He's from Georgia. And when he was asked, you know, he said, do you think this is fascism? And the guy said, didn't use the word, but then started describing a couple of things. But these guys, they don't understand. See, if you have to fight Hitler, and you try to, as Ed was saying in his briefing, one of our members said, you know, don't try to catch Hitler with like a speeding ticket. Right, or you didn't pay your taxes, Hitler, so how are we going to stop you? These people are looking for a dictatorship, and that's what this IPAB, IMAC, this austerity board does, is that it is above the ruling of the Congress, and it's really pathetic the way they set it up. Just get the we had a slug called, you know, explaining a bit how this thing works. And basically the only way the Congress can stop this board, Jeff, the only way the Congress can stop this board is they have like one shot, there's like one moment they can do it until, and that's only once in 2017. Right, so, and even then they have to kind of rush it up, you know, you get 2 months to do it. But the problem is that, you know, until then there's going to be a shitload of death caused by this board. So yeah, as I was saying, it's important to address the issue of fascism, because that's the situation we're in. We're in a financial collapse. We have austerity measures being promoted throughout the world, including Europe, more recently with the famous Greece issue, which is actually never mind Greece. Greece has problems. Spain has problems. They all have problems. But don't start bailing out the private system to supposedly help those nations. It's not gonna work. So, and so we gotta sit like it is and we have to bring leadership to the population. And that's the response that we get in the streets since the legislation passed, is actually people are super pissed off. They're pissed off because they don't trust their government. They hate Obama because he doesn't listen. This guy is overwhelmed by his own ego. And LaRouche said, you know, the Nero, call him Nero Obama, talking about the Emperor Nero. And this is like Nero 2, you know, the sequel. It's the same thing, you know, he's full of himself and he doesn't listen to anything. And he's going to bring the demise of the United States, but also of himself. And that's important because that just came in. That with the situation, there are also people talking about potential assassination. Since the guy is pretty much useless now, everybody hates him, so his days are counted. And there are people, there's a guy named Mike Vander, I guess Vanderbeg, who was part of a military group in Alabama, who went on television and start comparing Obama with Abraham Lincoln, but accusing Lincoln of killing hundreds of thousands of Americans with the Civil War, which is, you know, very bad assessment of history. And they are, and LaRouche said, look, you gotta be, this has to be in our minds in a sense that a potential assassination would create even more ruckus and probably trigger the wrong type of revolution in the United States, you know, armed or just nuts, people trying to actually pretending to go against, you know, the system or against the oligarchy or whatever, but actually even attacking their own constitution while doing so. But at the same time, when we organize in the street, the response is very electric. Like we had different deployments in Detroit and New Jersey where we were really like invaded by people who wanted to take literature and people that we told them, said, look, see, you gotta attack this as fascism. We're the only ones saying it like it is. Never mind Denis Kucinich, okay, big idol of the left movement, but this guy abdicated. He abdicated when he talked to Obama in the plane. And some of our sources told us that pretty much Kucinich had two choices: whether he saves Obama and vote for the healthcare, or he would be attacked as being with LaRouche, which is what happens when, you know, or everybody knows our position on this thing. So. But yeah, people were coming to our table. I mean, you had a waiting line, which doesn't happen often. And at a post office, not like a supermarket, at a post office. So people were stopping with their car, you know, wanting to know. They didn't have anything to do with the post. Didn't have to send a letter or something, but they were called by their friends to come and talk with us, and to be educated. And also being given a certain idea of leadership, because this is a huge fight. The solution is not, I mean, with the ouster of Obama, the idea is this itself, as itself, it's not the solution, but the ouster of Obama creates the conditions where an economic solution can be brought up. LaRouche's solution for a new financial system, Glass-Steagall system, which allows the protection of commercial banks, you know, banks with people's savings and stuff like that, and speculative or investment banks, as they're called, you know, can just flush them down the toilet or put them in the recycle bin, and then redirect our attention towards real economic development, infrastructure projects, also the creation of the CCC. I think it's called the Civilian Conservation Camps, which is the idea of getting the youth back into the idea of like having a real education, but also being able to produce things, because we'll need it, you know, just in the United States, but throughout the world, the need is to really rebuild. And you don't rebuild when, especially in Canada, you don't rebuild a country when 25% of your population is on Facebook. And we had the people thought Facebook was not dangerous during that on Facebook. So yeah, so even in the virtual world, you can get an STD. So if anyone is interested in STDs, there's actually a. I just want to put this up, but it's actually a study that shows there's a link with the use of Facebook and the propagation of syphilis. There's a region in England, a place called Teesside. It's like the Facebook place in England. And there's like a fourfold rise in the number of syphilis cases. Because, you know, you go on Facebook, you get, you know, what's your name? My name is Natasha. You want to, you know. So you have this cheap sex business going on, and people just get, and it's a crazy disease, huh? It says in the last stages, it can damage the brain, nerves, eyes, heart, blood vessel, liver, bones, joints, leading to difficulty coordinating muscle movements, paralysis, numbness, gradual blindness, dementia, and sometimes death. Which is pretty much the same thing you would get, just, you know, like you have the youth playing video games or, you know, watching videos endlessly on YouTube. You get the same type of disease. And I'm bringing this up not just because it's fun, but when you want to talk about a political movement or a revolution, you don't do a revolution on Facebook, nor through just the internet. You need to be outside. The virtual world has prevented a lot of people from acting in the real world, especially youth. So we kind of have to re-educate people saying, okay, well, let's bring up a change, but this change has to be, I mean, we've got to go out there, confront the population, help people develop themselves, and that's, I think, the class you'll see tonight should challenge a lot of you to think on a higher level, because if we really want to bring this new financial system and this development, we'll need to develop knowledge, courage, and creativity. And I just want to end, just to give you an idea. Because when I mean development, I don't mean charity. I don't mean, you know, singing a song for 80 or brushing your teeth for 80 or something. No, it's a whole fashion. The last thing I saw was there's going to be a UFC fight for 80. So, you know, it's like, I don't know what to do. So I'm just going to punch some guy and try to raise some money. So this is not going to work. It's all cute. But it's not going to work. And we attended a conference in D.C., which was a conference basically organized by the diaspora, Haitian diaspora. And, you know, talking about potential donors for bigger projects and stuff like that. And we went there, and we're actually the only group that had something to distribute there. And, you know, we organized on, you know, getting a lot of Asians out of the region because of the seasonal flood. Projects with the Army Corps of Engineers to rebuild the place very rapidly, efficiently. And also some articles about the history of Haiti as a republic and why all these problems. Because the problem is not just the earthquake, that Haiti was a hellhole for decades. So there's no infrastructure. And we saw it with when the Chile earthquake happened. It was like, I think it was maybe 1,000 deaths and some hurt. But they have a very different infrastructure system, a better. And Haiti was like, you know, like more than 250,000. So we have to address that. And it's not going to be done by Bill Gates or sending money or something. You have to think in terms of rebuilding. And just that, I mean, this is a shift. This is a shift that the population has to do. You have to understand that I'm not going to solve problems with $30 a month for, you know, a kid in Africa. You're going to need to change governments. You're going to need to change the whole financial system to be able to have a future. So we're very welcome at this event. People grabbing literature because they wanted to plan. Just to give you an idea, but there was a guy named Harold Ramden, who is he's a secretary general of an association, but his role, after we intervene in the people there, you know, inspiring them, here's what we can do. His first comment was to say, as a speaker, he says, don't get your expectation too high. Mm-hmm. Because if you have low expectation and you do a little bit, then you're happy. But if you have a high expectation and you don't do a lot, you'll be sad. Right? So, like, think practically. Don't think too high. You'll bust your bubble and you won't like it. So this is the type of assholes we're dealing with. People are completely demoralizing the population with this practical, you know, practical mentality. And I just want to also let you know a bit about the... because, look, since maybe about 6 months or maybe a bit more ago, 6 months ago, we've been talking about a development in the Pacific region, where China was starting to invest heavily in infrastructure in Asia in general, investing in nuclear power. Policies that made sense. Obviously, policies that still need a new financial system. In themselves, they're not a solution, but they're the right pathway. And I just want to end with, to give you an idea, but of the discussions happening, where you had in Nigeria, for example, 9 African countries got together to discuss about nuclear power development. That was the Democratic Republic of Congo, Egypt, Libya, Morocco, South Africa, Namibia, Tanzania, and Tunisia. And the nuclear discussion is also in the Middle East, as we've seen discussions being around Syria, around the United Arab Emirates. And the idea is, I mean, the idea of this African conference, they say, well, look, they say in Nigeria, the per capita consumption of electricity is about 136 kilowatt hours. And in most African countries, it's about 500 kilowatt hours. In the United States, it's 12,000. And when we think per capita, we don't mean like some gigantic guy just eating, watching TV, and, you know, using air conditioning. That's not what we're talking about. You're talking about an industrial society. You're talking about producing aluminum or having a modern healthcare. You know, that's what's consuming a lot of energy. That's why you have such a high rate. So the high rate itself is actually what we would try to aim towards. This type of consumption for the development and the sustainment of the society itself. So that's part of the good news. There's also the good news I thought I would mention, because it's more geopolitical, but it's important, is that Pakistan, with a dialogue with China, in dialogue with China, is now allowing India to pass a railway towards Pakistan, towards the other western region. I'm just going to show you. So that India is here. And if for India to have access to Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, they need to go through Pakistan. But if you know a bit the region, you know, these two nations, two nuclear powers, have been turned on each other for a very long time. So with China being a mediator, to have this breakthrough, something very important. But it's also something that has to be sustained, right? This is not like, hey, victory, hey, let's pop the champagne. This is a process. People are going to try to stop that process. Others will try to activate it. So it's our role, and it's important for Canadians especially to have this overview of this potential development, because we want to participate in it. And like the next week, for next week will be we will need everybody's help. If people can come organize, contribute, because we'll need to we always need to print a lot of literature. And next week there's going to be the G8 summit. The foreign minister of the G8 will be in Gatineau near Ottawa, and we're going to be present inside and outside. We'll also have another meeting, high level, with the Arctic nations. We want to be involved in there too, and we'll just want to do as much work as possible. These type of ideas has to be brought in the population, and we're going to educate Canadians that, you know, they're not that great, and we got to, but that there's a political fight, and LaRouche is in the middle of it, so people should join us and start organizing seriously. I'll leave it at that. Maybe I can take a question or two, and then we can leave this the floor for Luc and Meredith.
The railway will branch India to Pakistan.
What was hard to get was to get the railway from India to go through Pakistan and to reach the other nations like Iran, Afghanistan. That was the big thing, you know, because the border. I mean, recently the border of India and Pakistan, I think, was. There were threats. There were people. There were a lot of soldiers there, a lot of troops. So it's you know, if you say I want to have a railroad through your country, they say, hey, you know, take a hike or something.
So China was the mediator.
Yeah, China helped, because China also, when you look at it, in a sense, China, they can go whether through here, through Turkmenistan, but they can also go through India to reach Pakistan and the nation. So in a sense, it's a help for the regional development of the area. So it's important, because it kind of eases the tension. And it's better to actually, you know, a railroad, it's not just a bunch of tanks passing your country. It's something that you can build around. So it's a good step. Sweet.